This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Good day, greetings, hello. It's Art at the End of the World, the podcast that features artists, entertainers, and cultural leaders speaking about what it is to make art here at the end. And welcome, my name is Mark Wigmore. Time for another edition of Remix. And if you aren't that familiar with this particular series within the podcast, this is something we do every Thursday, and we take episodes from the first season and repackage them, have added some bonus material, and put it all together for you right here on the Zoomer Podcast Network. Years and years ago, I used to work at a radio station called Proud FM. It was one of the great radio experiences of my life, LGBTQ-focused radio. And when it launched way back in 2007, there was a lot of high hopes for what it would do culturally in this city and all around the world. I'm not sure it was able to completely do that, but it was a great cast of talent that I got to work with there. And one of those people is on the program today, Matt Cassano, a.k.a. heroin drag performer. Matt was part of that tapestry of people and personalities that I was able to meet there, and very rewarding experience. And we're going to get to Matt in just a moment. And interestingly, you may have seen it, RuPaul just hosted Saturday Night Live, and I think that was a bit of a benchmark or a cultural touchstone, if you will. I think there was a lot of excitement around Ru hosting. But Rue is a sort of a duplicitous character within the drag world at this point, and we'll get to that with Matt in a few moments as well. So very much in the zeitgeist right now. A reminder that Art at the End of the World, brought to you by Crow's Theatre, one of the country's most acclaimed arts organizations and based in Toronto's vibrant East End community. Crow's creates unforgettable theatre that examines and illuminates the pivotal narratives of our times, and what a great winter and spring season it's been there. Crowstheater.com for info and tickets. We are also sponsored by Red Eye Media, an innovator in arts communications and media relations for over 15 years. Red Eye Media works with leading film, television, and performing arts organizations to build their audience and their impact through engaged, passionate, and strategic communications. Those organizations include the Canadian Stage, Crow's Theatre, the Musical Stage Company, Pacific Northwest Pictures, Summerworks Performance Festival, and the Toronto Dance Theatre. For more information on the power of Red Eye, visit redeyemedia.ca. So, heroin. She's been at it for a long time. Hilarious, inventive, very thoughtful drag performer. The commitment, the level of artistry and entertainment that goes into her shows. Drag queen, drag performer, and she's been performing for more than a decade. And Matt and I met way back in 2008, I want to say, when that's about a year into working at Proud FM. He took a gig, I'm trying to remember exactly, he was helping to produce and helping with sales and helping with different elements behind the scenes. Eventually, he would be heard on air as well. And it was right around that time that I knew he was getting involved with the drag community. And we were going to see drag shows in that area and just enjoying what Church and Wells had to offer at that time. And I would argue, I guess, that it's probably better here 13 years later. But I remember going to see a couple different drag shows, and Heroin, then known as Heroin Marks, so that was a bit of a humorous moniker, just outrageous and hilarious and very talented and very committed to her craft. And over the years, I would see that the performances would get bigger and the clubs were, you know, picking her up to perform at different, better time slots, better spaces, a lot of theme shows, a lot of great posters and artwork all involved. So when I had the opportunity and I reached out to Matt, I said, gosh, it'd be nice to kind of catch up and talk about your career and what it is to be a drag performer in the modern age. And maybe a little bit about the music and drag anthems and RuPaul. I was so thrilled that Matt said yes. And she's currently over at Second City, I believe, still there. And in fact, that's where we met to do this interview. So you might hear a little ambient noise in the background. We recorded this at the training center. And I think it should be noted that for all the joy and love and sassiness and crassness and hilarity that's involved with what heroin has been able to do, with what Matt's been able to do, there's been an element of difficulty and sometimes downright frightening with what has gone on and what Matt has had to deal with. So we'll get into that as well. I couldn't be more thrilled. From downtown Toronto, here's my talk with drag performer Heroin. Second City Training Center, full of children right now. By the way, Matt Cassano, but on Facebook I see Matteo.
Yes.
Is that the correct?
Matteo is just the Italian way of spelling and saying Matthew, and I think it's exotic.
What do you get? What do you get from, like, do people mix it up, or do you?
Oh, I get, like, Matteo, and I'm like, I'm not a cereal. Like, it's Matteo, like... Matteo's.
But friends call you...
I mean, my closest friends usually just call me Heroin now, so that's right. Like, there's that. But most great. People just call me Matt or Matteo.
Right.
Actually, when I started working here, I had people be like, what's your name? Is it Matt? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, someone said Matteo. And I was like, yeah, it's Matteo too.
So more or less the conversation we just had.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, and then everyone's like, which do you prefer? I was like, just call me whatever and just don't call me late to dinner. That's all.
That's true. And I always called you Matt because that's a long time.
Yes,
since you and I have seen each other. We worked together at 103.9 Proud FM in Toronto, Church and Wells.
Yes.
And you came in, what was your gig?
I was hired in the elevator.
There. Heard a few things happen in the elevator there.
Oh, really? Oh, I did not know that.
Come on. You didn't? But you can imagine.
Oh, I can imagine, especially where we were set up.
Yeah.
I was a young kid. Yeah,
finding your way.
19 at the time. I was working for a Fab magazine, and I had to do an interview where I had to interview some of the on-air personalities for an article. And I was in journalism school at Ryerson. Yeah. And then I got on the elevator and this woman got on and she was like, how are you? And I was like, good, how are you? And I told her what I was doing. She's like, oh. And I was like, yeah, I kind of want to intern or do something here. I think it'd be fun. And she was like, well, I'm the CEO, so here's my number and let's chat. And she's like, yeah, I'll bring you on board. And then I became a copywriter, and then they had me in sales for a while, which was very odd.
I remember you sort of jumping around.
Yeah, it was very much just like, put him wherever, he'll figure it out kind of thing.
And, you know, for being such a young person, you were very, it seemed to me you were quite confident. Maybe that was just you on the outside, but...
Oh, well, no, I think I've always, I give off a confident...
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah,
I was getting.
But sometimes I can, like, not feel confident whatsoever.
How were you feeling in those days, though? Like, were you just like, okay...
I was full of pep. I was ready to go. I was, like, excited, and it was all new and exciting, and it was an adventure.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of changes there, that's for sure.
I was there for 3 years. I mean, it stands, as far as my radio career is concerned, as maybe the most fun I ever had.
It was definitely fun. There was a lot of... like Lady Gaga, before she was famous, showed up to Pred FM.
Through, yeah. Which was huge. Yeah. And we had so many people like that, like icons of the LGBT community. You know, we'd have the Golden Girls, you know, whoever was left.
Yeah.
From the Golden Girls would be on. Or, you know, some of the big dance queens from the disco era and that sort of thing. So
yeah, it was very interesting to see... See the revolving door.
So I leave in 2010, and it's a big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to replace what was going on for you at that point, because it was all of us on air staff, and then what happens?
Yeah, I forget when I left, actually, to be completely honest.
Was it around that time, or did you stick in a little longer? I don't know.
I think it was actually before then.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah. Because I believe I was only there like a year and a half, and then they started doing cuts. Because I was still with Fab, I started doing drag while I was at Pratt FM.
I remember that.
That was like that. Actually, the idea of me doing drag started in the Pratt FM studio because Deb Pierce. She was hosting a Halloween costume contest in 2007 on Maitland. And I said, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll dress up as you. And she was like, oh, that'd be hilarious, blah, blah, blah. And then so that was the whole plan. And then
I vaguely
it kind of took
this.
Off to yeah. something else. And then I was like, I'm going to dress as Marilyn Monroe and have a giant merkin with like crabs on it and call myself the 7-year itch. And it just became this ridiculous concept. And that's, yeah.
I remember right away I learned something about your sense of humor in that moment, because you had been fairly, I wouldn't say reserved, but you were somebody, you were working hard, you were trying to find your way in the radio business.
Yeah.
You were working for, like you say, Fab and a couple different organizations. But then I remember that.
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe with crabs. Was it crawling on the dress? Or?
They were just underneath the dress.
Okay. So they were kind of creeping out.
Yeah, so right. that when the white skirt went up, like in the 7-year itch, it would just be like, oh, that's the 7-year itch.
Right. You know? So there it was. So right away, we're learning that there's this tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of crassness, a little bit of cheekiness.
Very camp.
Ready
Very
to
camp,
go.
Yeah.
Just all in, pre-installed.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Like I always say, my drag persona actually developed in high school as my defense mechanism from bullies. Yeah. You know, like I took a lot of like Karen Walker. I was obsessed with Will and Grace in high school. I used to watch it with my mom, and like that sass, that confidence, mm-hmm. I took a lot of that on to deal with the bullies that would harass me. So I feel like that's where my drag persona actually really started.
Okay, so let's get there. Born in Toronto, or?
I was born in Hamilton.
Okay,
yes.
Hammer. And how long does that last?
I left at 17.
Okay.
Yeah. My guidance counselor considers me a success story because I made it past Mississauga.
Suddenly... crawling, just working your way around Lake Ontario.
pretty much.
Yourself here. So that would explain some of the bullying, I would imagine.
Hamilton?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. I was an Italian in the closet in a Roman Catholic high school.
Yeah.
Surrounded by a bunch of people who were very heteronormative and just did not know how to take me. I wasn't out,
right.
But I also wasn't really hiding.
No.
If that makes sense.
So, yeah, right. So you may have presented as...
Yeah, like people might have been like, questioning what he's up to.
So what's the family situation? Siblings, both parents?
I have a younger sister.
Okay.
My parents never divorced, but my dad did pass away.
Okay. When was that?
He passed away in 2009.
Okay.
Thanksgiving weekend, 2009.
Right.
That's my family unit. We don't really talk to other members of my family because they haven't been the best of people to my mother or my father. And we were just a 4-person unit and just very supportive and caring.
They were pretty supportive of you growing up?
Oh, yeah. Like, when I came out, like... totally fine, no issues. Like, my dad, before he passed, would come to my drag shows, you know? So, like, it was a very loving, small but loving family unit.
So sort of
had.
This insular group of four. So a bit of baggage
yeah,
there.
It was
but
interesting.
But nothing really to do with, in the sense of, you know, your own personal journey and coming out and all sort of thing. Just sort of
yeah,
family like, dynamics. We have them.
Well, I was accepted into Ryerson, so I moved to Toronto when I was 17. I was turning 18 that October, but I knew as soon as I moved to Toronto, things were going to be different.
Yeah.
Like, Hamilton felt like a jail to me.
Right.
And I knew once I moved to Toronto, I would definitely... And I hate when people say, oh, I found myself. But, like, I just found an environment to be myself. It was funny when I walked into my dorm room for the first time, I opened the windows and the first thing I saw were the two gay cowboys on the barn. Because, like, my dorm room literally looked out onto Church Street.
Right.
So I felt like Dorothy looking at the yellow brick road. Right. I was like, oh, here it is. My people. Finally.
So when I think about that, that's, I guess, early 2000s when you're in high school. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, mid-2000s? I believe 2005.
Right.
Is when I... 2005, 2006 is when I left.
Because we think of ourselves as a progressive city and a progressive society here in Ontario and Canada.
Yeah.
But you're still very much witnessing the changing of culture. And of course, it's still changing today. But you're...
Gay marriage had just been legal for a few years by that point.
Right. Right. So your middle school, high school experience was kind of typical of somebody in your position, just dealing with the bullying and
with the 1998 sex ed curriculum still. Right. This is a cucumber. This is a condom. Right. This is what you do.
I didn't even get anywhere near that far in my own. Like, yeah, I'm a, you know, 80s, 90s. There was nothing, you know, it's just like, okay, you be careful.
Yeah.
There's a bit of that.
You're going to get syphilis and die. Yeah.
So what happened? When do you come out?
I came out my second year of university.
Okay.
So I just turned 19. I was able to go to bars, and I made friends with other queer people, and I just was like, okay, now's the time. So I came out to my mom first. Well, I came out to my sister first, and her first reaction was, oh, you can't tell mom and dad. I was like, I'm pretty sure they already know. And she was just like, I just don't want to fight. I just don't want to fight. And I was like,
Don't hand me this luggage and leave me to walk home, you know, with it. Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm like, okay, relax. And then I think about 2 weeks later, my mom came to Toronto, and we actually watched an episode of Will and Grace, because she and I used to always watch Will and Grace together Thursday nights. I was like, Mom, I have something to tell you. And she was like, is it that you're like Will? And I said, well, more Karen, but yeah, pretty much. And that's how I came out to her.
Were you at all pleased when they decided to bring it back?
Oh, God, yeah.
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 Good times.
Well, it was needed for the time. Like, Trump was in office, then it's like, no, we need to make America gay again, you know?
Yeah. So let's do this.
Let's flip the MAGA.
And on network, not on cable.
Exactly.
Let's get to the people here.
Yeah.
Sort of felt that way, weirdly, about Roseanne, too. Like, not in the sense that it's, you know, obviously Roseanne turned out to be a disaster.
Well, yeah.
But I think a lot of the messaging of that show, regardless of her presence, has been kind of important to the conversation, which is fascinating to watch.
Well, it's interesting to know that, like, Wanda Sykes and, like, Whitney Cummings were, like, behind the scenes writing, too. Like,
right.
You could tell they were, like, definitely writing for Aunt Jackie on that show. Of course. And Roseanne was writing her.
Now they're all writing for Aunt Jackie.
Yeah, pretty much. So, that should have just been the spinoff. Forget the Connors.
Yeah, no kidding. So you alluded to it a little bit, but there we are in Proud FM, and you get this idea for Halloween costume, Deb Pierce,
yes.
And you go with the Marilyn Monroe. I'm sure I remember seeing you in this outfit, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I've done it for some Throwback Thursdays.
Right. And so tell me about your original, I mean, what gave you the confidence to even go that far and think, oh, I think I can pull this off?
Some friends and I from school actually went to a bar one night on Church Street. And I walked in it, and I saw this drag queen wearing, like, cow print and really bad makeup and a really weird, crusty wig. And her real hair was coming through, like, in the front. And I was just like, oh, my God. And she was kind of drunk.
Yeah.
I was just like, what a mess. And I was just like, I can do better than this.
Okay. So it wasn't like, I kind of love that, you know, tragedy that I'm looking at. It's more that I can exceed.
Yeah, I can do better than this, and I can actually, like, entertain.
Yeah,
because, like, I've always been told I'm funny, and
you are. You're hilarious, I think.
Thank you. And I just, like, I was like, I don't think I've ever felt as confident as a man. I thought, okay, drag can be maybe a vehicle to do that, and, like, just now, 12 years later, I'm like becoming that comedian I want to be in drag, and it's actually helped me with my confidence as a man somehow doing drag. So
funny how that works.
Yeah, because I mean, anyone who can get on stage dressed up wearing all this makeup, being uncomfortable first of all in everything you have to wear, and still trying to make people laugh and entertain, like, it takes a lot of guts to get up there and do that.
It does.
Be judged by a room full of people you might not even know, who might not know you, and it's just based on, like, their first interaction with you, what they could perceive of you. So
there's so many elements too. I mean, you think about, you're talking about being funny. I think you do need, often you need to be funny. Some people don't go totally down that road, but that's a big part of it for a lot of performers. But then on beyond that, you usually need to have some sort of musical theater, you know, skills or music skills.
And that's the thing. I've never had any sort of background training in.
Right.
Like, everything I have done has been just improvised and guessing.
Right.
I like to call it.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm guessing when I go out there. I'm like, oh, some jazz hands, a little spin here. Let's just make this up.
I've told this story a few times. I actually came here about 2 or 3 years ago to the Second City Training Center, and I took stand-up, which some people think is a preposterous idea because you should just have it in your bones. But I felt like I needed to be around people to work on my writing and so on. So I did. And the big finale of that was to stand in front of a crowd of 200 people in a, you know, dark club, something that you do all the time, and go be funny and just have the spotlight on just you and entertain. And I will say, in all my years of radio, to the millions of people I've spoken with or spoken to over the broadcast airwaves, that was the most terrifying moment in my life, in my show business life. It was really, really difficult. And I have such admiration that you get up there and do that sometimes 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. Like, I've performed for almost 12 years, and just last year I took my first stand-up class here at the train
center. Oh, you did? Okay. You and me both.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is very different, because a lot of times I would go out and wing it, and I just learned with stand-up, it's like, oh no, there's like a method to things that people don't realize.
Right.
And yes, for some people, it's a lot more natural.
Yeah, right.
And I feel like the class just actually helped accentuate what I already had and just hone it in a bit. But yeah, I was very nervous doing that show. People were like, oh, why are you going to be nervous? You've been on stage for how long? And I'm like, because this is kind of different.
It is a little different.
It's like, it's not me being like, go to the bar, grab a drink. You a bottom? Are you two together? You know, like, it's like, oh, I have to, like,
less crowd work.
Yeah. It's like, oh, they're actually going to be listening. I have to. And hearing what I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not background noise.
Did you have to do that at Absolute? That's where we did ours. I don't know.
No, we did in the JCB here.
Okay. Very good. So that's all right.
Yeah. It was good. It was a packed house, but I did it in drag, obviously, because I'm only going to be doing comedy in drag.
I was going to ask if that's what you decided.
Yeah, and I had to open the show because I had a gig that night, so I had to be the first one up from my class, and there was a lot of people who brought their parents, and I was like, oh, they're not ready for this.
No.
They are not ready for this.
No, I love you being first.
Oh, I know. That was
just setting the tone. It's going to get easier after this. So tell me about picking Heroin Marks. It was pretty early, and it's a character that you're, I guess, character. I don't know if that's the...
Yeah, well, the Marks has been dropped.
Okay.
So it's just Heroin.
It's just Heroin.
Because originally I started as just
More Heroin. Accessible.
Yeah. I started just as Heroin, and it was just... The idea was the name was to embody all the female, strong female leads that have influenced me growing up. Yeah. And like, I was like, okay, well, this will encompass all. Because some people will like do a play on a celebrity's name already, or take a last name from a pop diva. But I was like, no, I'm just going to encompass them by calling myself something that you wouldn't normally hear.
Right, right.
And then people were like, well, you need a last name. You need a last name. And I was like, well, I don't know. I can go with Heroin. And then Marks was added. And then people were like, oh, is she a drug addict? What is happening? And I was like, and I always say, I'm like, I wouldn't have this figure if I was a drug addict.
Right.
Like, I'd be a lot smaller. Right.
I remember thinking it was a bold choice.
It was.
At the time. I felt like, okay, we're just going down that road right away.
Yeah, it was meant to just be like, so when you hear it, you're like, okay, this is not to be taken seriously. This is supposed to be funny. This is not like a glam pageant, like, oh, I'm Devereaux the Third, like blah, 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 all that stuff that some of these pageant queens do. And as time went on, I just started hating the Marks. And I was like, no, I'll be like Cher and Madonna. Right. I'll just go one name because I do want to expand past Church Street. And when I've done TV things, I can't use my last name, my stage last name. So I was like, I'm just going to be Heroin.
I think that might have been. I mean, of course, I loved it at the time because it was so in your face and it was so provocative. But I think it's just maybe. It just going from a business perspective, it seems like a smart move.
Yeah.
Obviously, you take all these idols and these women, these strong women, you talk about that, and you pack them all into this persona.
Try to.
Yeah. The one thing I remember, and I don't know if this has remained, but seeing you in some of the, you know, early Zelda's drag competitions and so on, mm-hmm. it was pretty, you were pushing a lot of boundaries. Like, you were going for it, and
In what sense?
Well, just it seemed there was a group of people that when the spotlight was on in that situation and there was this sort of sense of competition, that people, it was almost like, how far can I push this to push people's comfort levels?
Oh,
to,
yeah.
You know, be outrageous. Tell me about that part of it for you, and has that changed?
Starting out, like, you, the thing is, when you're starting drag, you really want to make a name for yourself, and uh-huh. you really want to stand out and be memorable. So yeah, I did do some. It wasn't like always pushing them, but like, I did an Octomom thing as Joan Crawford, and I uh-huh. had like 32 babies just flying out of me out of a tank.
I might kind of remember that
one. Yeah, and then I did like a cracked out Snow White, who like does this like happy song from Enchanted, but I kill all the animals as I go along.
So this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, you know, now that you present it, yeah, how did we even really need to search? I mean, it was all right there. But I remember going, oh my goodness,
yeah.
you know, being in the audience and thinking to myself, boy, not everybody could get away with this in a comedic setting. But mm-hmm. for some reason, all these drag queens can. And what is the license that happens there? And what is the motivation to even want to do it?
Well, for me, it's always parody.
Yeah.
You know, it's satire, it's parody, and that's where it comes from. And then it develops, and it can get a little twisted. But I think
it's very creative. It can be very
creative. It can be. It can be a very interesting creative process coming up with things.
Have you ever seen someone go too far?
Yes, I have. I've seen some people change their skin color.
That old routine.
Yeah. Their skin tone, and
that's off limits.
Oh, that should always be off limits, because I don't think anyone should be presenting.
But that would be under that umbrella a little bit, as far as, you know, I'm going to push the boundaries, but maybe I will give it enough context so that it could just be, you know, just go under the wire.
Mm. But I know there's some people I look back on and things that they've done, and I'm just like, this is uncomfortable.
Right. I mean, there's probably elements of, even your show that might have been uncomfortable for people, but it seems like that seems to be part of the, I want to do something here. I want to make a splash and I want to, you know. So there's that. But what about from the more profound and emotionally, you know, mature perspective, when you're trying to do something that's maybe really beautiful or mm-hmm. has something to say? I mean, do you think about it from that perspective as well?
No, I always go for the laugh. Like, for me personally, watching a drag show, like, I want to laugh. I want to be entertained.
Right.
You
do occasionally see a drag show, though, where it does work on that. Like, it's a very beautiful, you know, rendition, even if it's a lip sync of a song that's very beloved. Or
whatever. Yeah. Like, that's fine. But, like, when people, like, I've seen people perform and they dedicate it to family members who have passed and things like that.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Like, I myself wouldn't do that. Like, I was dealing with my dad's passing and him going through all that, but I never did a performance on stage. I just tried to find the funny and keep going, and I never wanted to force upon people to give me all this sympathy, you know? Like, my goal when I'm on stage is to make people laugh. I'm not there to gain sympathy or...
Was it cathartic for you while you were going through your dad's passing? I mean...
It was tough, because, like, he was coming every week, and he was there when I won, finally. And they were usually, because the night that Drag Idol happened was Tuesdays, and he was going through chemo Tuesday morning. So they would literally, he would go to his chemo, then him and my mom would come to Toronto, and then they would watch the show and then go home. So, like, it became, every week it was me trying to top myself to make him laugh. Right. So that was the goal, always, to make him laugh. And if I made other people laugh, then great.
Was that the dynamic growing up, like a lot of laughter around the dinner table and that sort of thing, where you're trying to make your dad laugh your whole life? Or
I wouldn't say my whole life,
yeah,
but I definitely tried to, like, entertain,
right?
I used to like put on little shows in the backyard for family, and pretty sure that's when they were all like, really? God,
this is a really good magic show.
Watch my heterosexuality disappear.
Nice riff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so I feel like when he passed, I kind of like lost that for a bit, like, because I was like, oh, my goal was to make him laugh, what's my goal now, kind of thing.
Right. And then you won.
Yes.
That was nice.
Yeah, it was some nice money.
Yeah, nice money. That's the part we remember.
Well, it just paid for everything I put into it. That's only thing. I don't even think I broke even doing that contest.
That's something else I've noticed. There seems to be a lot of sewing going on, a lot of looking for, you know, elements to put in the show. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of shopping that happens.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely noticed, like, now that I'm 12 years into this, like, my style and aesthetic has definitely developed and changed and evolved, and now I look for, like, before I used to be like, oh, that looks cute, that looks cute, that looks great, but now I'm just like, no, this is going to be a piece, you know, like, it's an investment, so you get something, you pay whatever you have to for the fabric, for the design, embellish it, accessorize it, like, I treat them now as, like, little images of myself. Like, okay, well, this one is for when I'm doing this kind of music, or this is for when I'm doing this comedy mix. And, like, you have to treat it that way. I just can't go on stage wearing something that looks pedestrian now. Like, before, I used to, no problem. Like, I'm like, oh, I got this at Winners. Oh, it looks cute.
Right.
Now I'm like, no. Yeah. I don't want to wear something on stage that someone could walk into the bar wearing, you know? And that's definitely where my mind has evolved now, and it's just more trying to be a Joan Rivers in drag, kind of like that over the top comedy voice that's ridiculous and just really glammed up with big Italian hair.
Right. And it must have been at the beginning very, you know, it's fun. It's fun to, to dress up, and it's fun to imagine ideas and all the rest of it. But it sounds like now it's actually a real point of pride.
Now it's just like, this is my image, this is my brand, this is my business. That's how I see it now. Before, it was just, it was like a little side hobby that I was developing that became really profitable for me, and now I just treat it as, okay, this is a persona, this is a character, this is something I've developed that I want to take into different avenues.
You've very much become a performer. This is, I mean, you started out in the radio business and going to Ryerson and all that, but the show business life. You're here at the Second City.
Yes.
You're on stage a lot.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, I definitely realized that I needed to try different things, because I didn't want to be pigeonholed into just the stages on Church Street.
Yeah.
And, like, I've had experiences where I've gotten to travel, and I've gotten to experience bigger stages than what Church Street has. And I was just like, I want more of this. And I want to, like, I want to bring this, but bring it out. And outside of the village, outside of spaces that normally aren't queer or have seen queer representation. So I just want to really expand.
I feel like we're in a good time for that.
Oh, for sure.
What do you... taking from the modern interest in drag, because you know, everybody sees now reality TV. RuPaul is sort of peak RuPaul at this moment.
I think it's jumped the shark, personally.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got Drag Race, we've got the tours, we've got the spinoffs.
Well, it seems now like if...
It seems more popular than ever, so it's hard to argue with that reality.
Like, I will say the pro... has been that now it seems like it's very fashionable to have a drag queen at an event. So there's more opportunities for, like, local Toronto girls to get booked for certain things. Like, I've been driven 2 hours out of the city just to do a bachelorette party. I've done, like, fundraisers. I've done, like, I get contacted for certain things. And it's because they want a drag queen there to, like, make it fun. But then there's also a lot of cons with it, because these Rue girls come into town and they get paid thousands of dollars, and the local queens who get booked to open for them get nickels in comparison.
Right.
You have people who are willing to pay $35 and up for a ticket to see a Rue girl, plus additionally for a meet and greet, and then they go up and usually tip them a 5, 10, or 20, but then they won't come to a local drag show that has no cover and, like, just don't support the scene here. So it's become... I'm not a fan of drag. I'm a fan of Drag Race. And then actual, like, people see what's on TV and they're like, that's drag, but it's not real drag. Like, it's drag to an extent, but mm-hmm. it's also very manufactured. Like, they are told in advance, okay, this is going to be the category. So then they have these costume designers make things and then they bring it. It's not, oh, we're in the workroom now.
It's not, doesn't have that DIY.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have that. That's the thing with Drag Race now. It's become just, it's a runway.
Right.
It's,
so you're not identifying with that group of people.
No, I identify the Rue girls. The only one I really like enjoy is Bianca Del Rio, because she's taken that exposure and she's become what she always was, a stand-up comic with it. Right. Like, I identify more with Bianca or Jackie Beats or Coco Peru or Varla G. Merman, like the classical entertainers who are storytellers. You know, that's where I'm with my drag, and that's what I want to accomplish with my drag. So I look to them. I don't look to these Instagram queens who can take a great photo and face tune it, but get on stage and have nothing to offer.
Right, nothing to say.
Yeah.
Would you take the opportunity if it knocked on your door?
So a Toronto Star actually interviewed me yesterday, and they said that they were like asking about the restrictions of Drag Race, and if the restrictions were gone, would I ever audition or try to get on the show?
So the restrictions now are U.S. only, or how?
The restrictions have always been U.S.
only. Okay.
Yeah, we have our first Canadian queen that is going to be on the show, but that's because she was sponsored.
Oh, okay.
And has worked in Nashville since, I believe, 2015.
Made some inroads there.
Yeah, yeah. So she's had her working visa and green card, all that stuff. But if they took the restrictions off and Canadians could apply, I'm not sure I would, because I'm not a statuesque model like some of these girls. And a campy clown with a side of glam and a heaping serving of sarcasm and wit, you right. know? And I'm not sure how well that would bode on the show. They definitely cast for certain people for editing reasons, and just the fandom it's created is it's a very toxic fandom. Queens get bashed constantly on social media because, oh, you eliminated this queen or you did this. People take it way too seriously, not realizing all these people are getting paychecks at the end of the day. You can still be supportive and appreciate drag, but they just, the stan culture that they've created on Twitter is just, it's very toxic. And it's a bunch of like 12-year-old girls or these like young gay boys who don't actually know what drag is and haven't done their research, who think that they can dictate what drag is. If you don't look like a Rue girl, you're not doing drag correctly.
That's the story of pop culture though at the moment. I mean, really anybody with light on them right now
yeah.
is facing that army.
Pretty much, yeah.
Ready to go. But it is sort of acute in the sense that when you look at, as you point out, the Rue girls and Drag Race and everything that happens under the umbrella of that production mm-hmm. team, I can imagine just how intense it becomes when people are being critical.
And yeah, it's just interesting when people who actually have never dressed up or done drag have all these opinions and feel that they know sure. what drag is.
Right.
And that's where I'm not sure I'd want to expose myself, my persona, my brand to that.
More in moments with Matt Cassano, aka Heroine, including her top five drag anthems. You're listening to Art at the End of the World on the Zoomer Podcast Network. Let's get back to Art at the End of the World. Heroine about to share her top five drag anthems. That's just in moments. But it's all fun and games until it isn't. And Matt isn't new to this profession. And so he's had to deal with some very difficult situations as a gay man, as a drag queen, and as someone who's very cognizant about gender and identity. And over the years, I've had a chance to read about some of the situations he's found himself in. And it is heartbreaking. It really is. And I don't know when things are going to change. When you think about how progressive a city like Toronto is, a pride event that's the envy of the world, a community, safe spaces, social services, and yet there's still prejudice and anger and hate and violence, and so it's difficult. There is a lot of unchecked emotional baggage in the world that people like Matt sometimes have to deal with. So let's get back to it. It's Heroine, drag performer on Art at the End of the World.
Do a lot of changes in culture, and I think for anybody who, you know, I was talking to Karen Robinson this week about, you know, as a black woman growing up in Canada, mm-hmm. from Jamaica, trying to make her way in the Canadian acting scene, you know, you can imagine there was roadblocks and hurdles there, and a specific experience. For you, both as Mad and as heroine, and particularly your drag life, it feels like it's been very much a family situation. Like, you always seem to have at the beginning too, there were a lot of mentors in your mm-hmm. in your life and people that you looked to, and this was a group of people that you could kind of trust.
I still have mentors. Maggie Casella, she's like a comedy mentor for me. Mm-hmm. Misconception is my drag mentor. Paul Bellini has become like a writing mentor for me. So
are all people who have been around for a while too.
Yeah,
they've been there since way back.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, Paul and I just met recently, but we had written for Fab at the same time and stuff.
You'd seen Paul around.
He's actually been my writing teacher here at Second City. I feel like you never stop learning.
Yeah.
You should always keep picking up tips and tricks, and because that's the only way you can excel. You just got to keep working the muscles.
Was it also a place that, with any personal issues or just the experience of being a young man in the LGBT scene, that must have been nice to be able to have these mentors and people that you could just
speak
to about?
For guidance. And I'm trying to do that now with some others as well. Like, I've taken on drag daughters before, and I have one right now. I'm looking out for them, and I'm just saying, these are mistakes I made. Don't go down this road. Learn to figure out, this might not be the best idea.
Are they listening?
They are.
Did you listen?
I did, to an extent, but then there were other times where I was like, no, I just have a feeling that this will be great, and then it leads you into a very toxic environment sometimes.
Right.
Just in terms of, like, I'm just trying to guide on, like, this is where you should try to get into work, and maybe don't try so hard here because they don't actually treat entertainers as well as this place.
So, you know? Some show business.
Yeah, just
101
like
there.
Pretty much within
your world. Where does that toxicity come from? What are the traps that people fall into, or what
insecurities? I feel like any toxic environment always stems from insecurities, because people immediately get their backs up when someone can do something that they can't. Mm-hmm.
See that raw talent on stage, and that's threatening.
Yeah. Or you just see someone excelling, doing something that you wish you could, and then there's like this insecurity that takes over. I mean, I've had moments of insecurity in my career, but I think I've now just reached a point where I'm like, I'm doing me.
Uh-huh.
And no one can do me. They're doing what they do. That's good for them. This works for me. This is what's helping pay bills. This is what's appealing to an audience. Like, I'm good. You go do you.
Right.
But I don't think, like, that took maturity. After 12 years, like, you get that mindset. But I that's why I'm trying to, like, teach the young queens that are starting. I'm just like, just remember, like, you're still developing, and it's interesting.
Something that struck me over the years, and I've kept my eye on your career, and it's been amazing to watch you flourish and thrive and do everything you've done, and the shows keep getting booked, and like you say, the traveling and so on, it's great. But a couple times, I can just think of two or three over the last decade, where I've been reading something on Facebook, and I'm seeing that there are moments in your career where you are facing very harrowing and difficult circumstances.
Yeah, you know? I really make the heroin name work for me.
right. I mean, most recently you had a really difficult episode, I think, with somebody in a club who wouldn't leave, and there was all sorts of...
Oh, that was a spinning incident.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, the death threats.
yeah, just that little one.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that was a few weeks ago. That was just... this gentleman approached me outside and was trying to...
And you were in...
I was in drag.
Drag.
And he was trying to touch, and I kept saying no, like, leave me alone. And he was very persistent, and he like went in, came back out again, and then like just tried to reach again, and I was just like no. And I went back in and I told the bar manager, and this guy's friend was actually already being denied service, and they were being asked to leave, and they were refusing to leave. So the manager went and called police, and then I was just sitting there, and he just came up, and he just started threatening me and all these things, and I just sat there taking it. And my co-host was like in shock, like, what is happening? And all she could say on the mic was like, call for the manager's name. She didn't know what to do. And I just sat there and I stared at this guy just yelling at me, and I just said, all right, have a good night, after he threatened to kill me if I stepped outside. Me saying, all right, have a good night, that just triggered something, and he just like spit in my face.
Right.
Yeah, so that was interesting. He was arrested that night, and as far as I know, he was still in custody because he has some priors.
Uh-huh.
No idea who he is. Don't even know his name.
So when something like that happens, I mean, it happens in, mm-hmm. in various elements of show business, but I have to imagine it's a little bit heightened in that situation because you're realizing this is coming from a place of he's a broken person mm-hmm. on some level.
I think what bothered me the most was that it happened in a safe space.
Right.
Like a queer safe space. These things have happened before to people, whether it be on the street or like in the entertainment district or just somewhere that isn't really queer. Like mm-hmm. there's been so many incidences of homophobia and hate crimes and transphobia, and for it to happen inside a queer space is, I think that's what through me mm-hmm. because I'm like, this is supposed to be our safety net, you know, like this is supposed to be where
it has been for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It was like a light switch went off in this guy. Like, first he's trying to make advances at me, and then all of a sudden it's just this rage. I've heard of this light switch effect, and that's why there are so many trans murders, because of people like this, who this light switch goes off, and it was just
like, they're embarrassed for themselves because they haven't dealt with some of their baggage.
I can't speak. I'm not trans. I've never experienced what it is to be trans. I consider myself more two-spirited.
Right.
I feel I have both male and female energy.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a balance between them. Some might say like that's like non-binary. I don't know what it is. I'm just me, and uh-huh. I will do whatever I feel comfortable with. But it was definitely interesting to see that, like, just his face. And that's all I am left with. I like everything else blurred out around him. It was just his eyes that I focused on, and just seeing that aggression. This is the aggression that so many people have seen that might not get to share their story now. And that's what bothered me. And it being in a safe space, I was like, this is, things need to change. People need to wake up and realize that we need to do more. We need to protect more members of our community. And that's what I said. And when I wrote about it, I was like, please make sure you look out for our trans brothers and sisters more.
Mm-hmm.
Keep an eye out, because I've seen what they can go through with people like that, who just have this hate and aggression for someone just being who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
It's such a time of huge correction and change. We're celebrating the differences in profound ways, and yet that is causing this sort of pushback
mm-hmm.
in every element, politically, what have you. I mean, you pointed out, you know, Donald Trump earlier. I mean, yeah. I think we're living in a weird pushback moment against a lot of the ideals that seem to be progressing and moving forward. I mean, you must, after 12 years of doing this and having experiences like that one, be seeing that incremental change, but also realizing there's a lot left to discuss as far as sexuality, mm-hmm. identity, gender issues. You know, it's a big gumbo that's still being yeah. churned.
You know. That's a good way of putting it, I guess. I love any sort of food reference.
Does it feel like the needle's moving? Do you feel like everything's in a better place now than it was maybe when you and I met in 2008?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
No.
Because there have been advances, but there have been setbacks too. I mean, we are living in America Junior right now in Ontario. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a premier.
You're feeling that.
Oh, yeah. We have a premier who's just hurting people who are already hurting.
Right.
It's upsetting because it makes you think, like, who voted for this guy?
Right.
Kind of.
Not Toronto, apparently.
No. and that's what it's interesting too, because there's so many people who outside of Toronto get to dictate Toronto, but they don't actually experience Toronto. They don't live here. They don't know what it's like to get around the city. They don't know what it's like to deal with the TTC.
It's like the kids tweeting about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Exactly.
They don't
people
really know.
People who have opinions and telling you, oh, you should do this, you should do that, but they've actually never done it themselves. And that's the kind, that's the culture we live in now, where it's people have opinions who maybe shouldn't always express their opinions.
Right. The democracy of information and the ability to express yourself has not necessarily all led to positive change.
Cool, freedom of speech, all for that. Yeah. But it's also like respect other people, you know, like just because you think a certain way doesn't mean other people do. So you don't need to be the loudest voice in the room. People need to honestly stop for a second and listen to others, because then a conversation can happen and maybe someone can learn something from what someone else is saying.
And maybe have a little fun along the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Make a new friend. You never know.
Okay.
A new friend you can debate with constantly.
Tell me about some of your favorite nights as a performer. Maybe something you saw or something that you did that stands out as a particularly strong showing of your craft.
Yeah, like I'm excited where I'm headed with my drag. One moment I will say that enjoyed was I did 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton,
right,
which has become such a campy, ridiculous throwback song.
Right.
I performed it, and I was performing at a venue where you could actually see the street. So I left the venue so the audience could still see me, and then I like hailed a cab, and as the song was ending, I was like, you know, I'll walk 1,000 miles, I get into the cab, and I said to the guy, I'm like, just drive a little bit, I'll give you $5, because someone had already tipped me, and so I had money in my bra, and I was like, I'll give you $5, just take me there, I just need to make it look like I'm driving away. So then he's like, oh, okay. So I get in as the song's ending, and then close the door, and then he drives away as like the piano is fading out.
Oh my god.
That was a lot of fun. And then people were like, did she leave her suitcases still here?
Right.
Like, did she go home? Did she have her keys?
That is a great moment.
Yeah, like that, like moments like that, that's what I enjoy.
Improvisational.
Oh, completely.
And it completely. All worked out timing-wise. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Was there a time you talked about sometimes where occasionally you've seen somebody really impressing you and that's maybe rattled you a little bit?
Was like early.
Sure.
Early.
Yeah.
That was mostly when I was really just trying to establish myself. And I think all new queens go through that, where they're just like, I need to be the best. I need to stand out.
Right.
So when someone else is doing something you can't do, you immediately are like, why can't I do this?
Right.
You know, and I've had some conversations with queens who have been doing it just as long as I have, or a little less, and they've said that they're like, I used to like think to myself, why aren't I as glamorous as this one, or why am I not as pretty as this one, or why am I not as funny as you? You know, and they question things, and then they realize, well, that's because I'm this. This is what I do.
Uh-huh.
That's what they do. That's what they do. That's what they do. And this is what I do. And I think it takes maturity and experience, and then you kind of find your groove and your niche.
Who's your favorite drag queen right now
in the local scene, or just
it could be in yeah, maybe in the local scene or and then beyond?
Beyond, like, I will always be a fan of Coco Peru.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, she's just epitomizes what I love. And Bianca Del Rio, like, I love that she gets to tour a comedy show and write it herself.
Who should we be looking out for? Who's the up-and-comer? It's tough, right? That's going to put you in a spot.
Well, it's not only that. It's just Drag Race has created this, what I like to call cosplay queens.
Okay.
Where it's people who watch the show and are like, oh, look at all the fame they're getting.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to start doing drag. So then they don't do their research. They don't do their homework about what drag is, what it stands for, what you can do with it. They just immediately go and buy stuff on Amazon and then buy followers on Instagram, and they think, oh, I'm going to be like a Drag Race queen, and they walk around looking for this instant fame, and they don't know what it is they offer. Like, when I started, I was like, my goal is to make people laugh. So now when a new queen comes up, I'm like, what's your goal in drag?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did you start this?
Right.
And when they say, oh, I really like Drag Race, I'm like, That's not a good answer.
That's not going to serve you for a long time.
No. You're going to be
not sustaining.
Yeah. Like, good luck making an impact, you know?
Right. You'll have a good first show, and then that'll be...
Yeah, so that's why it's hard for me to say, like, up and comer. Like, I love my drag daughter, Moscato. Mm-hmm. She's a comedy queen as well, and I call her the Melissa to my Joan.
Right.
Like, she's, like, the perfect little right. sidekick.
Yeah.
She's done quite a few shows with me now. We just have great chemistry on stage and off stage.
That's fun.
Yeah, we talk every day, and it's, like... It's weird, but there's a 10-year difference between us. Like, she's 21, I'm 31, and...
You gotta have people like that in your life, though, you know?
Yeah.
It's nice to have that fresh perspective.
Yeah, so it's like, I've been mentored before, and now I get to mentor, so it's a nice little flip. So, I guess locally, I would say Moscato. I know people will be like, oh, it's just because she's your daughter. It's hard. There's a lot of new queens, but I don't know how many I would actually give the term queen to.
Right.
I would say it's a lot of... drag people. Because I think now, especially with Drag Race and all the people that are starting it, I think now you really have to earn the title of a queen,
right?
Because you have to,
maybe more than ever.
Yeah, because there's so many elements to being a drag queen that people don't realize, and you need to know or have some knowledge or be able to do at least a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just, oh, I'm gonna go out there and lip sync this song. It's like, you need to be able to work a microphone, you need to be able to adapt to the crowd that's in front of you.
Sure. Crowd work.
Yeah. And that's why I started coming to Second City and started taking classes, because I'm like, no, I want to like work this muscle. I've worked it enough on stage just guessing, now I want the formal training for it. So
it's great.
I've done stand-up, I've done the writing. Next term I'm taking acting 1. Now my road is to do conservatory here and be the first drag queen on the main stage. That's my goal. I want to be the first drag queen on the main stage.
That's a great goal.
So that's where...
I hope you get it.
Me too. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, it's true.
But it's just like a vision board thing. It might not come true, but it's something to aspire to.
Five music artists that are quintessential to your performance catalog and or to the drag scene in general. Five artists that you think are vital to the community, that get used a lot, or that are surprising the group, and you can take on this list however you want.
Top five.
Sure.
Dua Lipa.
One, don't pick up the phone. You know he's only calling because he's drunk and alone. Two, don't let him in. You have to kick him out again. Three, don't be his friend. You know you're gonna wake up in his bed in the morning. And if you're under him, you ain't getting over him. I got no rules, I count him.
Tell me about Dua Lipa.
I don't know. I thought it was a brand from MAC when I first heard the name. I had no idea. I was like, oh, what MAC campaign is this? And they're like, no, it's a singer. And I was like, oh, cool.
Why? Why Dua Lipa? What is good about Dua Lipa?
I don't know.
Okay. So you're not using Dua Lipa.
I mean, I know two of her songs, but I don't do them as often. Because okay. It's just, that doesn't work with my style.
Right.
Her music doesn't work with my style.
But very, very popular.
Very popular, yeah.
Okay.
I would also say a lot of the new queens... And even some of the not so new queens, they do quite a bit of Fifth Harmony. What's that other one? Little Mix.
When we're deeper in the crowd, can you feel my body now? Do you think about us? Whoa. Do you think about us?
Little Mix is like a UK pop girl group. They've had a few hit songs, and drag queens in Toronto just seem to love their music.
Little Mix,
yeah. Okay. And then Fifth Harmony, Dua Lipa. I still feel like Gaga and Whitney.
Gaga and Whitney, big.
Yeah.
Whitney still
Yeah.
Did those two documentaries help? They kept her in the zeitgeist?
I don't know. I just think Whitney, after passing, I think she'll always, her music will always live on in drag bars.
It just,
for sure,
is there.
Oh yeah, like,
it's part of it.
If I put in like, I want to dance with somebody, or How Will I Know, and like the music starts, like the audience right away, wah! And it's like, oh, okay, into this. You do It's Not Right, But It's Okay on a Friday Night, and the dun 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 starts, and they're just like, whoa.
Here we go.
And I'm like, here we go, gonna get a little napkin going, pretend I'm sweating a lot, which I usually am anyway, so it works.
She's interesting in the fact that they've dragged out pretty much all her dirty laundry at this point. She has no choice in the matter.
No.
And she seems to be surviving it, you know, on the bedrock of her talent.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas it seems like after 2019's over, I'm not sure we're going to be talking about Michael Jackson in the same way.
No. No.
Could be over for MJ. Could be coming to a close.
I mean, I personally think it was over long ago.
Right. That could be true. That could be true.
I mean, his death, yeah, all of a sudden, like, people were like, oh, he's got a pass on things. And it's like, no, I don't know about... I don't think he should have a pass. I think there are things that he did in his life that should be talked about.
Wow.
Yeah.
These big documentaries that are coming out this year are going to... surely shut some doors.
Oh yeah,
I would imagine. All right, so Whitney and Gaga.
Yeah,
and Big.
Yeah,
and okay, last one.
Well, that was five, wasn't it? Whitney, Gaga, right. Little Mix, Dua Lipa, Fifth Harmony. Ariana Grande. I can't believe I forgot Ariana Grande.
Who can forget Ariana?
See, I don't care boots? For her.
No. It's not really my jam either, but...
if the fact that, like...
Her image is that
she, of... Her fan base is the 12-year-olds on Twitter. Like, right. That's... And the little gay boys. Like, that's her fan base.
Yeah. Look what you taught me.
The fact that I heard a young gay one day say, Seven Rings is such a good song. It, like, is so original and all these things. And I was like, she literally rips the Sound of Music. Like, right. That's where the melody and the beat comes from. Like, what do you do your history homework?
Right. But he's like, I'm 12.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, they were 21. I was like, my God.
I'm 21. I don't know.
It's like just kind of crazy. But yeah, definitely Ariana Grande. She just dominates gays as well.
Well, this has been a treat, and it has been so exciting for me to watch your career really happen over the last 10 years, and I love your commitment to
performance. I'm glad, because I've forgotten most of it.
I love your commitment to performance, and I love everything you've done, and I love that you've shared online some of the trials and tribulations you've gone through. It gives me certainly a new respect for what it is you do and putting yourself out there like that. So,
Matt, thank you.
Thank you. Thank
no
you for
problem.
Being here
Thank
today.
You for sitting down with me and chatting.
So that's it. I really loved reconnecting with Matt Heroin, and I find the best way to keep up with all things Heroin the drag performer is on the socials, Instagram and Twitter at Heroin the DQ. Have a look for updates there. We'd like to thank our sponsors today, Red Eye Media and Crow's Theater. And thanks to you. Thanks for checking out this remix edition of the show. You can get in touch, art@theendoftheworld.com, classicalfm.ca. You can be in touch on social media as well, Facebook and Twitter. There are Art at the End of the World pages that you can like and subscribe to. My Instagram handle, by the way, is @WigDad. We're back on Monday with my special guest, legendary music programmer and publicist and all-around great guy to talk to, a million stories, Richard Flohill will be here. We'll speak to you then and for as long as we can.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.